This podcast was recorded on the lands of the Boonwurrung people of the Kulin Nation. The land on which I am lucky enough to raise my son always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
This episode of Witching Hour is brought to you by us, Loz and Lou. We'll be releasing our very first Ready or Not go-to guides dropping on the 1st of April. We've created three practical and comprehensive guides starting with breastfeeding and returning to work, postpartum planning for the fourth and fifth trimester, and childcare 101. Head to our show notes to sign up for early access and a cheeky discount code.
Hello and welcome to Witching Hour, the podcast that looks at what's exciting, delighting, intriguing and frustrating us when it comes to making work, work. I'm Lou.
And I'm Loz. Yes, Lou. Yes, you did.
I didn't even say anything about doing it. I just did it.
I knew you wanted to say Lucinda, your formal name.
Very professional.
Kicking things off with a good news story. The Australian federal government has announced plans to pay superannuation and paid parental leave from the 1st of July 2025. Eligible parents of babies born on or after that date will receive an additional 12% of that payment added to their super fund. About time.
So good. I'm so glad to see that this has been put up and I hope it gets passed.
But Lou, not everyone is liking this. And there was a comment on someone's Instagram post that I saw and it said this. Having children is a choice. Why does everyone have to supplement that choice? That was actually made by somebody that was quite notable or in the public eye, which I found super weird. Like, you just don't say that.
That's bold, isn't it?
It's so bold. And then someone commented back, which I was like, F yes. Someone had to create the future taxpayers. I don't know.
This is brilliant. Where does she think she came from?
Honestly, I don't know.
Is she grateful? Maybe she's not grateful.
But also, just the comeback comment. I'm like, yeah, correct. Women are contributing to the economy and also paying tax. So
yes,
it would be nice to get paid super. Yeah. Very funny.
Dr. Lee, go back to veterinarian or whatever you bloody say. Can't speak today. Good start. So let's get to it. Today at Bogota's Hair School for Men, that is a bit of a trip up, that one, for me. I'm not saying that very well.
I was going to say Bogota.
Bogota. Do you know the only reason I know how to say Bogota is because I made a Colombian friend at an internship in New York. That's a great story that makes me sound far more interesting than I am.
You go, girl. You drop that.
So what's happening in Bogota at the School for Men? Men are learning how to step up to do their share of housework and childcare, from changing a diaper to styling a ponytail. I love to see it. I can't wait to talk about it. To celebrate the launch of our upcoming postpartum planning guide, I'm going to ask Loz all about her postpartum experiences, both with Sienna and Zave. And then lastly, we share the stats and stories from our latest Instagram poll, all about the mental load. That word that gets thrown around quite a bit might make you roll your eyes sometimes, but it's a hot topic and there's a lot to it, so let's get into it. Loz, we're releasing our postpartum planning guide, our breastfeeding and returning to work guide, and our childcare 101 guide on April the 1st. We are very excited. I'm really proud of what we've created. I think
it's
going to be bloody useful for a lot of people out there. And I've obviously been chatting a lot about my postpartum experience with Posey in the Postpartum Diary series on Ready or Not. But we haven't heard that much about yours. So I wanted to ask you firstly, let's take it back to Sienna, your firstborn.
Yeah.
Tell us about your first postpartum experience. What surprised you? What challenged you most? And did you prepare a single thing for it?
Okay, I'll start with the last question. No. I honestly was so focused on what pram I was going to get and like all the little cutesy stuff and like my Leander change table, you know.
They are good change tables, I'll give you that.
They are, but like all these things that you're like, oh, I really want to buy nice things for my first, or like, you know, longevity items, like a really nice cot, etc. That I didn't really think about postpartum. And if I'm honest, I used to think, and I don't think this now, but I did. I used to think it was a bit woo-woo. Like, you know, when people are like, oh, you know, just postpartum this and postpartum that. I was like, shut up. Like, it's fine.
And matrescence and all of that. You're like, well, get on with it.
Yeah, I just used to think, like, what do you do? Just lie down flat for 40 days and eat organic food and, you know, all that shit that I was like, this is just rubbish. Like, people have been having kids for years. Just crack on with it. And I actually was really surprised with how difficult I found postpartum, because in my mind there were so many other contributing factors that went along with it. So, for example, I found breastfeeding really, really difficult with Sienna. And my personality is like very, you know, type A. I was like, I've never failed at anything. Like, I'm not failing at this. Like, the kid's going to take the boob. This is ridiculous.
You get on there and you suck,
yeah,
little
you
lady.
Get on there. And what I found is that I was, you know, YouTubing stuff late at night all the time. Like, I was so obsessed with it that things like nutrition or like having water or like knowing that you could have cooling pads or having like comfortable feeding bras, I didn't really invest in the first time around, kind of took a back seat. And second time around, I was like, F that, I'm never doing that again. Like, I want to make sure I feel good. I look and feel like myself. I'm not saying that everybody should do that, but just little things for me that I didn't do the first time around with Sienna. And I felt actually exhausted, depleted. I looked tired. I mean, I looked tired with the second one, Zave, but I felt a bit better about looking tired. But yeah, it took me by surprise, I would say.
And what do you think surprised you the most outside of breastfeeding?
Oh my God, there's so many things. Hair loss. lack of sleep, little conversations that I hadn't had with Ryan beforehand. Oh, stuff as like simple as, I mean, you would know this, Lou, like we always used to go to dinners at our auntie's house on like a Sunday night, and I just hadn't even considered not going. Like, I wanted to go and see everybody, but then it would bother me if Ryan would drink at dinner and we hadn't discussed like who's driving, like who's packing the baby bag, who's got just like basic stuff around parenting. Like, I hadn't had any of those conversations.
It's funny that you mentioned packing the baby bag, because this time around, our poll today is all around the mental load. And that's one thing that I'm always thinking to myself. I'm always the one packing the bag to leave the house. Hayden stepped up in so many facets, but that is absolutely one that is still very much on my plate. So it's really interesting that you mentioned that.
Yeah, and I think over time what ended up happening for me anyway was all that little shit that I hadn't spoken about while I was pregnant or spoken about before gave me the shits and started like this snowball effect of me just feeling enraged. And I'm not an angry person usually. Like, I'm obviously quiet. How would you describe me? Fiery maybe, or like
passionate but not angry?
Passionate.
Your passion's normally going to happiness, not anger.
Yeah. But I did find myself like with this feeling of mum rage, and I used to read about it and be like, it can't be that bad. Like, you've got a newborn baby, you should be happy. But it actually wasn't directed at my baby. It was directed at my husband and those people around me, because I felt like I couldn't ask for help because the things that I wanted seemed so basic. It's just that I hadn't actually put any thought into it. So once I kind of realized it wasn't woo-woo, and I should have had those conversations and enabled myself more of a me-centered experience, I probably would have had a better time.
Like, focus on getting the care that you deserved, that you perhaps thought was useless the first time around. So what did your food situation look like for your first postpartum? Was there any plan around food?
Not at all. I reckon we got a meal delivery from somebody, which was really nice, like super helpful. I actually ended up getting so many trays of lasagna that I genuinely don't think I ate lasagna for like a year after that. I made myself like useless stuff that I just didn't feel like eating. Like, I remember when we got home, Ryan was like, oh, what do you want me to stock the fridge with? And I was like, oh, maybe get some like eggs. Like, you know, we can have eggs for breakfast and like some salad stuff. I didn't feel like eating salad.
That is the last thing you feel like. You just want warm things.
Yeah. I mean, upon reflection, to be real, looking back, my diet was so bad. Like, I think I lived off Hydralyte and coffee and like baked beans on toast.
And so let's fast forward to late pregnancy with Zave. What are we planning this time around? And how did it play out? And how did it help you?
Okay, a couple of things I think contribute to this. Number one, I think when you're having your first baby, financially, a lot of the focus is on buying new things or like setting yourself up. Because a lot of people say, oh, you may as well invest in the good stuff, you'll pass it down.
And also, to be fair, regardless of whether you're getting secondhand or not, you're buying these things for the first time, whereas second time around, you don't have to buy as many of those things. That's a really good point.
Yeah, and you're really excited. Like, I don't care what anybody says. You know, when everyone's like, oh, you know, you don't need all this stuff. Okay, yeah, sure. You don't need all this stuff, but it's nice to have it. It is so fun when you're first pregnant. All you do is think about it, like, what's this baby going to look like? Who's it going to be like? It's the size of a chia seed. Or should a chia seed wear a little hat, cute little take-home from hospital outfit, all that kind of stuff. Or, you know, I didn't even buy myself pajamas for hospital because I just thought to myself, oh, actually, no, I lie. I did buy pajamas and they were super expensive. And they were these white linen pajamas. They were white and that's they were right. So scratchy. They were awful. I hated them. And I was like, I cannot believe I just spent that much money on the most impractical stuff. Like, what was I thinking?
So impractical. We laugh at that version of Loz now. We're patronizing here, aren't we? We can't even believe it.
I know.
At the time, I would have been like, oh, gorgeous pajamas.
I know. And now I'm like, linen on a sore nip.
Like, and white. What? Like, you're bleeding pretty heavily at the start.
Yeah, it was just bad. Second time around, I obviously had more disposable income because I had saved for certain things. Like, I was like far out in that first week. Like, I would have loved pre-made meals that were somewhat healthy but nourishing and delicious. I didn't really want to be eating shit that I'd had in the freezer 6 months ago. I didn't buy as much stuff. So for Zave, like, I already had stuff from Sienna. I'm not one of those people, like, I feel like I need new stuff for every baby. And I didn't know what I was having. So I'm like, it could be another girl. I've got so many onesies that Sienna fit in for, like, I don't know, a month. They'll be fine. So I ended up investing in a postpartum doula. And I want to set the record straight that not every postpartum doula is what I traditionally thought of as, like, a organic, natural, vaginal birth, no epidural, you know, nurturing.
Well, they're all nurturing, I hope.
You know, of course they are. But I think to be honest, like, before I had kids, I kind of felt like the birth space was just this odd space that I didn't belong in. And then when we started discussing witching hour, I was like, oh, I really want to normalize that it doesn't have to look like the same for every woman. And also, like, you can't have everything all at the same time, but you can do it whatever way you want. Like, my doula, the second time around, the key things that I really wanted, and yes, this is self-indulgent, but I don't mind saying it, is I really wanted my hair done. Like, I wanted a blow wave. I wanted to feel like me. I wanted someone that would come over. I had a great birth experience.
So did she give you a blow wave?
Gave me a blow wave and I loved it. I absolutely loved it. She brought me a coffee. She made me the most incredible food. It was beautiful, like delicious cookies with chocolate. Like, and I know they have all these like beautiful things in them, like, I'm sure they're organic.
They're all doing good for you, but they tasted great too.
Tasted so good. I honestly just wanted somebody to hold my baby while I had a really long shower and shaved my legs and just like washed my bod. She brought these like incredible eye masks. So it wasn't all in my mind woo-woo. It was more like self-care. That's what I invested in.
And it's worth noting that Charlotte Squires and I spoke about that when she was doulaing me for the first month of Hosie's life.
Yes.
And she was chatting about how there's so many different doulas. And it is worth calling out because if you're sort of a bit more Western A-type personality, perhaps you'd be a little bit nervous about having someone that was a little bit more Eastern than you're comfortable with or a little bit more into, I don't know, reading your chakras or vaginal steaming or something like that. If they're not your things, that's fine. You can still find a doula that's for you.
I myself was like, this is not me. Like, I don't want someone that's going to do that. Like, I had an epidural before I even went into labor. I loved it. I had the best birth experience ever. I don't feel like I need to live through the pain and breathe through it. That's not what I wanted to do. So in my postpartum experience, I wanted someone that reflected that, that had a conversation with me, that bought me a coffee. I got my hair done and I felt like myself. I think that was really important. What else did I invest in second time around? Oh, I bought some really nice bras. I actually, this is so funny when I look back at it, a girlfriend of mine had given me previous feeding bras for Sienna because, of course, I hadn't thought about it. I'm like, yeah, they'll do, like, whatever. And it was very sweet of her. But I remember at the time being like, these aren't even soft. I wanted like a soft feeding bra that looked nice.
When you say soft, do you mean underwire or in texture?
No, I feel like they'd been washed so many times. They were almost like pilly and I just hadn't really, I was like, oh yeah, thanks for lending that to me. Like, I didn't really care.
That doesn't feel good on the nip once your nip's a bit wet. You want something soft.
I invested in silverettes and I genuinely think they changed my breastfeeding journey. Like, that would be my number one recommendation to anybody. If you can't buy them full price, which they're really expensive, there's definitely other alternatives. Like, you can buy them secondhand. I mean, I know it sounds a bit cringy, but I mean, they're sitting on top of someone's nipple. They're sterilized. Like, people wash them.
Yeah. Also, once one person buys them, borrow, share around.
Exactly.
I always want to share the things that I've bought because I don't want them just sitting there if I'm not using them.
Yep. And I bought a really nice robe.
Oh, I love that. Bit of self-care. So what my last question here then is, what did going through postpartum the first time teach you about how to navigate the relationship, mental load, just dealing with the emotions of postpartum side of things?
So for me, I felt hormonally that I had a similar experience the second time round as I did the first time round, but I was just more equipped to navigate that or like prepare for what was coming. So personally, for the first 6 weeks with Sienna and with Zabe, I had so much adrenaline. I wanted to see a lot of people. I didn't mind the no sleep because I was just so excited. And so, I don't know, I had just so many endorphins. Like, waking up at night, I was like, oh my gosh, like, I produce this, how cool.
Yeah, like in awe. You're like, oh, hey, so good to see you again. I love you.
Exactly. And I also feel like that's the time when you have the most support. So, like, the most people come and see you, the most people send you things. So I found the most difficult stage with Sienna, that like 6 to 12 week period, when that kind of died down and I was left to myself. Like, Ryan had returned back to work. We didn't have any food. I was like eating eggs on toast or baked beans or whatever.
It's interesting that you say that. Today I'm about 8.5 weeks postpartum and we just had the long weekend, so I wasn't prepared. We've been really good with our shopping, but this week we just weren't prepared with our food shopping. And I was like, fuck, what am I going to eat? Opened the freezer and there was some meal train and doula food that I'd put in there. So I totally agree, because you're almost expected to go back to real life, and you do, but you get so busy with that that you can forget about, oh, I need to like eat well and I need to keep these things up and I'm hungrier than usual and I'm thirstier than usual.
Exactly. So I found that 6 to 12 week period with Zabe, I'd like organized meals for myself, like once the meal train had run out from friends. And that's when I booked in my doula session. So they were a little bit later, I believe. I can't even remember looking back. I think I had a couple early, and that was genuinely, this sounds so self-absorbed, but it was because I thought to myself, I do want nice hair when people visit me. I'd like to have a blow wave. And I'd like to be like, pretend I got my shit together. Like, I knew I didn't, but
yeah,
I don't care. That's what made me feel good. I also think tiredness for me really kicked in with both around 12 weeks. I had a shocking sleeper the second time around, which I wasn't fully prepared for. I think if I hadn't put conversations in place while I was pregnant with Sienna, I hadn't really spoken to Ryan about like parenting styles, what we were going to do. I was so focused on that second time around. So little things like, on Saturday when we have both kids, like, what's the plan? Are you going to take Sienna out, or what? How do we parent when one wakes up overnight and wakes the other one? Do you tackle Sienna? Do you go back? Do you resettle, or do you sleep with her? Like, all of those conversations I honestly had from when I found out I was pregnant. So I felt much more in control. And then it got to that like 14 week mark for me. And I said to Ryan, like, I am so tired. I can't continue. I need help. I can't focus. My emotions are all over the place. If I hadn't have gone through the steps of discussing, like, what are we going to do with sleep this time around? Like, are you going to help during the night? Should we introduce a bottle earlier? All those kind of things. I felt like I wouldn't have been as prepared mentally. And then that obviously would have affected my emotions more. But this time I felt far more in control of my postpartum experience.
I love that. Hindsight is a beautiful thing. And that is what we've put into this go-to guide. We've worked with Naomi Chrysalakis, who has been a guest on Ready or Not, and she's an expert in postpartum planning. She's a postpartum doula who has also returned to work herself. So it's all about the fourth and the fifth trimester, this guide, the fourth being your postpartum experience, your fifth being that return to work experience. A lot of stuff about relationships, everything we've just been talking about is basically brought together into this, I think it's nearly 80 pages, this go-to guide, and we're really proud of
it. It's big, but it's so good. It is so good. And I think it's for different types of people too. Like, if you are the type of person that wants the full holistic experience, this is for you. If you're someone like me that maybe has more of an A-type personality, that's like, what conversation should I have? Like, what is important? What's a checklist? We've detailed that in this guide. It's very down to earth. Naomi is amazing. Like, she is very no bullshit.
Yeah.
Here's some tips. Take them or leave them. It's not pushing it down your throat. I think it's just something that I wish I'd had the first time around, more as a conversation starters, or like, these are things that you can do that don't cost anything. These are things that you can do to like enhance your experience. Or if you want to go luxe, here's another bucket for you to start saving towards.
And I love the checklist, because there's so much in this guide that I would never have expected or have known about pre-Ray. And I don't think, often you can't know these things unless you purposely read up on them. Even when people just tell you things when you're having coffee, in one ear, out the other normally, until you go through it. But this guide really enables you to go through what maybe to expect, and the checklists around postpartum planning and return to work planning and the conversations to have are just brilliant. So we can't wait to share that. April 1.
At Bogota's Care School for Men, an innovative city-led program, men learn how to step up to do their share of housework and childcare, from changing a diaper to styling a ponytail. How good. The program, the first of its kind in Colombia, addresses one of the most lingering aspects of gender inequality globally. In countries around the world, women shoulder 3/4 of all unpaid caregiving. Whoa, that's a lot, according to a report by the International Labour Organization. And in Bogota, for instance, women on average spend 5 hours and 30 minutes on unpaid work a day. Far out. I just reread. That's a lot.
That's nearly a full-time job.
More than twice the time that men do, according to a 2017 study conducted by Colombia's National Statistics Agency. This unequal division of home labor reduces women's time for paid work, naturally, because if you're spending 5 hours doing unpaid work, I mean, what are you doing working overnight as shift work, alongside education and self-care, and is driving higher rates of female poverty. Even as women enter the workforce in greater numbers and secure better pay, experts in Colombia say that the domestic gender gap has remained largely unchanged, citing differences in societal expectations of men and women. But the care school is dedicated to the belief that such norms can be changed. One of the main objectives of the school is to encourage men to become agents of change, which I love, in a domestic setting specifically. So according to stats released by the district, only 6 out of every 10 men participate in domestic work, compared to 9 out of every 10 women. Far out. Who's one of those 10 women? I'd like that.
I want to meet her. I want to have a cocktail with her.
Me too. Caring is not a favor. Caring is a duty. And in Bogota, you learn caring. This is something that the mayor said when he opened the center. I mean, if you've got a mayor. I can't even say the actual word.
Mayor. Bogota and mayor.
What a legend. What a bloody legend. And he's right. He's so right. Or she's right. I don't even know who. I think she's right. Yeah, there you go. Of course it's a she.
Yeah, of course a man's not leading this charge. Caring is not a favor. Caring is a duty. That is a brilliant phrase.
It is. And it's smack bang true. That's what it is.
This piece made me think of the fact that we always assume that mothers know how to mother because we've got this magical little thing inside of us that teaches us how to mother, when in reality, mothers just know how to mother because it's normally the mother that's at home with the baby and they learn on the job quicker than the other parent, the dad, in mother-father relationships. So, Loz, I wanted to ask you, what scared you the most of leaving Rye alone with the kids, based on this idea that we spend more time with the kids, we're more used to them, and a lot of us do feel nervous in those early days of leaving the dad or the secondary caregiver with the child, or maybe even littler than the child, the baby?
I am a freak for my own way of doing things. So to be real, what freaked me out is that...
You're a bit of a maternal gatekeeper, if I'm being honest, aren't you? You like things done a certain way.
I do. Like, when it's so bad. When I see people, like, I like have this wrapping technique that I really like. When I see other people not doing it, I'm like, oh, I just
like muslin cloth wrapping, like a baby wrap. Oh.
Yes. Like, it's got to be so tight, like a...
Yeah, okay.
When it's too loose and I can see their arms failing, I'm like, give it to me. I need to redo it.
You're like, fuck you,
Ryan. I have to hold myself back.
Fuck you. The fucking mental load is all on me. You can't even wrap the baby.
See? But you know what? So many things, like wrapping Sienna, making sure he gave her the right amount of meals, making sure she got enough sleep, anything that I wasn't doing, I was like, can you do it as good as me? And I still don't believe, no, like, I don't think so.
It is the hard thing because we end up being the gold standard if we're the primary caregiver because you're comparing it to what we do. So it's really hard to let go. When I tell you you're a maternal gatekeeper, I'm not even saying that nastily. It's because
it's true. I can't help myself.
You get so used to your way of doing things and maybe I'm just lazier than you. I think it does tie in with being a clean and organized person, which I am to an extent, but not to the same extent as you. I do think that makes it harder to let go in areas of mothering. So then my next question for you.
Wait, I want to ask you.
Oh, go. Ask me.
What were you nervous about with AIDS?
I'm always the fear-based person of what if he leaves the room and where is the baby and will he be able to hear the baby cry? I definitely noticed that I'm a very like fearful person in those ways. If a kid is by a pool, for example, do not expect me to relax. I will not. I can't. It's so bad.
Yeah.
And I'm really noticing the same thing with Posey. When I leave Posey with Hades, I actually have the same fears that I did with Ray, which I'm surprised about because I thought second time around I would be more relaxed. And that's in the early days, things like, I must admit, same as you, wrapping. And it's not because we actually don't use swaddles. We just use sleep sacks because she likes to have her arms up. It's not so much about him doing it the way I do. I just worry about things, for example, him covering her mouth and not realizing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So everything for me is really around the fear-based. She's mostly been breastfed at the moment, so that hasn't been a worry. Having said that, I would worry, again, this comes back to this fear-based, like catastrophizing things in my head. I would worry about when he'd heat Ray's bottles, him accidentally spilling hot water on Ray. Those stupid little things, like proper, if you get them wrong, our child will no longer be with us type things. Not so much the day-to-day.
Okay, so yours are more serious.
Mine are more like, mine are day-to-day. Relax, sweetie. I wish mine were day-to-day now that we're chatting about this and I'm realising my fears.
Do you know what I remember? I actually do remember the first time I left Zave and Sienna with Rye. Zave was a really gassy baby and I felt like he needed to like get out a big burp to have a decent chunk of sleep. And Rye had this like odd, weird technique of burping him that I don't know where he saw it. Like he must have saw some other guy on the street do it where he like held and like did this.
I'm like, Hayden does that too. I'm not kidding. I'll show you with Posey. It's like this.
It's so frustrating.
Literally like
yes.
This.
I'm like, no, dolls. Like,
what is that?
I don't know. I think it's like a men thing.
Where did they learn that? Did they go to Bogota School Care for Men and we don't know about
genuinely,
it?
I think they've seen some other guy do it at the park and thought, oh, this looks, it must be the done thing.
That looks good.
And it's like all the men just copy each other. So I used to do that with Zave and I was like, no. He needs to get out a bit like, hold upright.
Push against him. It's not just, you know, if you're going to twirl him around, put some pressure on his feet so that he's like, you know what I mean? To-ing and fro-ing. Don't just roll him up in the sky.
And then eventually I was like, I remember thinking to myself, like the first time he had him, I came back and I'm like, oh, how long has he been asleep for? He's like, oh, 30 minutes. I'm like, okay. And all I could think about was, I bet you we didn't burp him and he's going to wake us. Like a psycho. I'm like, who cares? He's a friggin' baby is going to wake up regardless.
I know. You can't help it at the start. You're hyper-fixated. I think our hormones doing that too, like hunter-gatherer style stuff. For anyone that obviously couldn't see what we were just doing, I was holding Posey up in the air and quite literally just doing circles with her on this idea of teaching men care and the fact that we're not innately born with skills of mothering. We actually just learn them on the job. What are some of the misconceptions you may have held because of these gender norms that we've, I guess, been brought up with that made you surprised that when you did leave Ryan with the kids, you were like, oh, actually, of course you can do that because you're a human and you've got problem-solving skills and you can figure it out.
I think men can do the whole lot. I think they might be nervous, like more nervous because of additional pressure either from their partner, i.e. me, Or
from not doing it, from less experience.
Yeah, this constant of, you know, you don't have to do it or men don't do that or whatever. But they can do it all. It just might not be in the exact same way that you would do it. And that's something that I've found I've had to let go of because the more children you have, the less control you have and the more you want your own time. And if you value your own time, something's got to give. And usually it's not the duty of care, but it's – the way that they're cared for. Like Ryan, his number one priority is safety and love. He gives them both of those things. And then the rest, if he's given Sienna an extra chocolate, if he's given Zay, he gave Zay a milkshake. I was like, is that necessary? You just got to let it go.
Well said.
What surprised you?
I agree with you. I don't think I can think of one specific thing. I think it's walking in the door, and not now so much, because now I know that Hayden can handle it and do all of these things, but it's walking in the door and going, oh, you've nailed this. Everything's in order. Baby's asleep. You're happy. Milk has been drunk. Solids have been given.
Yeah.
Nothing went wrong. Stop acting like he can't do it all, because he can.
Yeah.
I love that this school, I guess, rewrites the narrative of mothering being something innate versus something you learn.
I also hope it gives men the opportunity to have that special bond with their child, like doing their hair and changing their nappy and putting their onesie on that mums do every day, because it is those little moments that, oh, this is so pathetic, but the older they get, the more you miss. And it's nice to have a partner or a dad or a grandparent or whoever it might be involved in those moments as they happen.
Let's hope that Bogota lead the way for many other parts of the world. So, Lozzie, all this postpartum chat and reading through our guide and editing it inspired me to put up a poll around the mental load, because it does come into our postpartum planning guide quite a bit.
Yes.
And so, question one for you. You can guess the percentage or just guess the most popular answer and I will tell you. So the first question is, I am dot, 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 the primary caregiver, the secondary caregiver, or genuinely 50-50 parenting?
Primary caregiver.
Yeah. Obviously, that's the top.
I had to get straight in.
78%. 0% is the secondary caregiver, which is quite huge. No one is the secondary caregiver amongst our pollers. And 22% say they are genuinely 50-50 parenting. Our standards are low, because I was quite impressed by that, which is probably a sad reflection of the times.
I am super impressed and I love it. I actually do love it. I hope that as a society, we see more of that. I mean, that's definitely not my situation at the moment, mainly because I can't let go. But if I could, then it would be better.
I love that. We are having a bit of a therapy session too. Yeah. She can't let go.
I can't.
So the next one is, I carry dot, dot, dot of the mental load. So either 100%, 50% or more, 25% to 50%, or less than 25%. What do you think was most common?
I would say 75%, but it wasn't in there, sweetie. So I reckon 50%
or more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's correct. That's at 71%. 100% of the mental load is at 19%. That actually...
Oh, that's terrifying.
...unpleasantly surprised me. That is a bit higher than I thought, to be honest. 25 to 50% made up 10% of the pollers, and less than 25% made up 0% of the pollers, which is a little bit disappointing. But I guess the end goal that we want is 50-50, really, because then it means that both parents are set free to do the things that they love and they're both equally looking after the kids and the household.
Agreed.
Next question. My biggest mental load stress is housework, family life admin, or no me time? The other answer was all of the above, but we know that that always wins.
It's definitely all of the above. I really hate admin, so I'm going to say the admin.
Yeah, family life admin came in at number one. That was 31%. Yeah. Housework, 19%. No me time, 6%.
It's kind of sad though, isn't it, when you look at it like that? Because I feel like people aren't prioritizing me time either. As in, you're not miffed about it because it's probably not even on the priority list.
That's so true. Like, it's so far down that you can't think about it. The people that picked family life admin aren't having 10 hours of me time a week. They just can't even get to it because they're focused on those things.
Exactly.
That's a really interesting point. And I'm not surprised, I guess, that housework fell under family life admin, because I feel like in terms of starting to let go of things and share the load, the things that secondary caregivers seem to pick up is housework before items such as managing childcare communications, all of the admin that comes with that, vaccinations, getting them new clothes, new uniforms, et cetera, et cetera. Next question. My partner understands the stress of the mental load. Yes, no, or sort of.
Oh, sort of. I feel like they all suggest that they get it, but they don't. They don't get it.
Sort of was the resounding favorite at 63%. Yes is 30%, and 7% said no.
Yeah. Do you know, I listened to a podcast the other day. One of the things that they said was when you're discussing the mental load and it's really difficult to explain it to your partner, or they're like, yeah, yeah, I get it. I know you hate doing the daycare forms or blah, blah, blah. Another way to frame it, and this sounds quite dramatic, but it's very clever, is what happens if I died? As in, who would do all this stuff? Would you feel confident and comfortable doing it? And if your partner is like, no, I don't want to do that, then I feel like the conversations will start around, okay, how do we outsource it, or how do we more evenly split it? Because I don't want to do it either.
Yeah. And also, yes, you would eventually learn it, but you don't know anything about it. Like, your head's just so not in
it. It's quite a morbid question. But when I was thinking about it, I'm like, that is so true. Because if I said to Ryan, what happened if I died and you had two children? What would you do with cleaning? He would instantly say, outsource it.
Interesting.
I'd get a cleaner. Well, then that's what we should do.
100% that's what you should do. I must say, Hayden's been taking on more of the cleaning load. Sorry to boast, but he really has lately. My version of the dying threat is that Hayden takes no photos of me, because he's just not a photo person. And I'm always like,
it's so good.
If I die tomorrow, you'll have no photos of me and the children, and I'll have all these gorgeous shots of you with the children. And I just think he says, why do we need so many photos?
I know, but it's sweet.
Oh, I want all the photos of me and the children, and I want the candid moments, not the ones I bloody ask for.
Yeah, candid but no double chin. That's what
I
want.
Yeah, ideal.
Like
ideal.
Ha, 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 with my hair flowing in the
I look
background.
Stunning. I'm ready, but you be ready too.
Yeah.
I always take those photos of other people, by the way, even friends. I'm like, I capture that shot of you with your baby at the gorgeous moment. Why doesn't anyone think to do that for me? Some friends do, and you think, gee, you're the most thoughtful angel on the planet.
It's true.
Next question. We could go on about me needing photos of myself for hours, or we could get on with it. The mental load is the biggest source of tension. Yes or no?
Yes.
What percent do you think it was?
There's so many other things that I'm thinking of, but 70%, because I feel like, oh my God, you look excited. I feel like in the last 5 years, a lot more discussion has happened around the mental load. There are other areas that I don't necessarily think fit in that I think are equally as valuable, but because it's been framed in such a light and there's so much conversation around it, I think people instantly bucket everything in it.
Okay, so firstly, 71%, well done, you God, you're getting good at this.
Yes.
And secondly, what are the other things that came to mind? I'm really interested to know, because I do think that things often fall under the umbrella term of mental load that either need to be put elsewhere, or things are left out of the mental load that are a part of the mental load.
I would say self-care, physical exercise, nutrition.
Mm.
I think all of those kind of things are separate facets. Like, the mental load to me is more like thinking about things to be done.
Same, same.
But there's like separate buckets for actual doing things for you that I think are equally as important, but people are kind of forgetting about them.
Yes, I think that's very well said. Next question was, any successful changes made to reduce your mental load? I'll give a few quick tips here. Lowering standards and expectations and shared calendars. So that's a really common one. It's the dropping that don't do it that way, do it my way thing, where we want things done a certain way sometimes. I've gotten much better at dropping that. Loz, it sounds like you really want things done a certain way.
Yeah, I do. I'm sorry. I like things done my way.
Darling, you
it's
do
the best
you.
Way.
No, yeah, it's the only way. It is the only way.
Oh,
constant
God.
Communication was another really popular one. And I think communication is the biggest thing in reducing the mental load and also reducing tension between Hayes and I.
Yeah.
Swapping roles to understand each other better. That is such a big one, because lately Hayden's been doing so much and doing so much of the thinking. Lately, I must admit, I've been a bit almost empathetic that on top of that, he has paid work to navigate. And it's quite funny to come from that space of being a staunch feminist that's normally more in the vein of, I can't believe how much I have to do. I can't believe I have to be the pregnant person. I can't believe this, that, and the other, to being like, wow, you're taking on so much at home and you're also taking on so much at work. So it has made me understand him a bit more in a way, because he's sharing so much of I guess, my roles or what society has told me my roles are.
Yep.
Last two here. He cooks more of the dinners than before. That's a great one. And this one is a little bit upsetting, I've got to say.
Oh, no.
Sent him the Penny Moody Imperfects episode. He ignored it. So, no, we don't like to hear that. I'm sorry that that has been the case. Next question. If you've made changes, what was the final straw?
Oh, so good.
Two really good answers here. I'm going to keep it quite quick. Surviving, not thriving, and never having any food prepared. Love that. Just stop making food and the person will have to find a way to eat.
Yep.
As you say, if someone was the sole cook in the house and they died, the other person would have to buy food.
Exactly right. Actually, on that, I did have to have a little laugh the other day. I got home and I was going out for dinner and I was like, I am not. Why am I preparing everyone dinner when I'm not even eating it? I'm like, nah, no way.
When I hear my friends say that they're preparing food because they're going away, I don't say anything, but I feel dead inside.
Yeah.
unless the secondary caregiver is also doing that, then great. But if you're the only one that does that because you're out of the house, no-y. It's a no-y.
It's a no-y. Anyway, I got home and I just saw this like bowl with some like milk in it. And I said to Ryan, what did you eat for dinner? And he's like, cereal. And I was like,
that says a lot.
I was like, oh, it must have been delicious. He's like, there was no food. I'm like, yeah.
Oh, Ryan.
There was no food. And I was like, sort it out yourself, bud.
Good on you. Love that.
Yes, you got the lot down the street.
One question I did ask, but I didn't get any answers on, unfortunately, yet, was if you're single, how do you reduce your mental load? So if anyone listening has an answer to that, I'd love to hear because it must be so much more challenging.
Grandparents, probably.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Aid help, childcare.
Paid help single, though, that would be hard.
It would be hard. It's almost impossible, actually, after saying that.
Mm. This, of course, was the most answered question, and that does upset me a little bit. What has been your biggest struggle regarding the mental load?
Explaining it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
100%.
I'm just butting in.
Mm. No, I love it. Good answer. One person said that it never ends. Mental exhaustion was another answer. Anticipating three other people's vastly different needs and planning/scheduling for that, that's a huge one. It's so hard to let go and know things will fall by the wayside or not be done to your standard. You can relate to that. We all can. Let's be real.
Yes.
Another really interesting one here is re-navigating it with a newborn. So you get used to the rhythm with your first, and then all of a sudden you've got another one and you're like, wow, there's so much more to this. So I totally resonate with that. Last one, my mind feeling constantly chaotic. There's no resting. And I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yep.
It's literally the load you carry in your mind.
It is.
Best tips for reducing the load. Meal plan every week, the fair play game. Do big cook-ups and freeze so you've got meals to go on busy days. Don't save jobs until nap times. Do what you can when they're awake, then rest. I love that. You don't have to be sitting with your child every second that they're awake.
No, you don't.
Sometimes they can sit down. They might have a book. They might be playing with something. They might be watching TV. If they're happy and safe, go do a task in the laundry, in the bedroom, whatever you need to do while they're awake and then rest when they're asleep. That's a brilliant one. Outsource as much as you can afford. Scheduling and writing things down. And the last one, and this upsets me again.
What is
marry
it?
Marry better.
That is so good. That could be my favorite.
If you have reduced the mental load, what have you let go of? House doesn't have to be spotless. My kids don't need to be in heaps of activities. I love that. You don't need to be the perfect parent and your house does not need to be perfect either.
No, it doesn't.
Another person said standards, which is a common answer yet again. And everyone else said the same thing about a clean or tidy house. That's the thing everyone is letting go of.
Do you know what I think people aren't saying though? I reckon the thing that you're letting go of the most is yourself. As in, and I don't mean, that sounds so horrible. I actually don't mean it in like a negative way. Like
no,
you
know,
let yourself go.
Oh, you've let yourself go, darling.
No, no. But what I do mean is that I think the things that you end up letting go is like
getting your nails done, getting your hair done.
Exactly. But most of all, when I was away recently, I went for a shop in London and I came across that store, Allo. Is that how you say it?
Oh, like A-L-O. Yep, yep.
Yes. So I love their stuff. It's beautiful. There's this really nice pair of leggings there. And I was like, jeepers, they're really expensive. And that's like, how often do you wear them?
Every day.
Because every day I get my kids dressed. I give them breakfast. I grab a coffee out the door. I have a cold tea. Don't get a piece of toast. I look like shit. I look like I've literally just rolled out.
And you won't even buy yourself some bloody leggings.
That's what you're sacrificing. It's you. Like, I don't.
It's so true.
I don't normally look like this. I used to look so much nicer.
I also, it's interesting that you bring that up because it's also the way we focus on what we are worthy of. Hayden is so much better at spending money on himself than I am. And it's not because he tells me not to or anything like that. It's just because I think someone else deserves it. It's ridiculous.
Or I'm like, when am I going to wear that top? I'm literally wearing activewear every day. Or for the office, I'm wearing the same thing with like a different top every day.
Yeah. And so then the last question here is, if the mental load isn't your biggest source of tension, what is? I was genuinely interested because it's definitely the biggest source of tension in our house. And that's with someone that shares it pretty well with me.
Yes.
I wouldn't call us even. I'd say maybe 60-40, or I definitely wear more of it. But I was like, what else is there?
Yeah, what else is there? Tell me.
So finances, which is a really good one that I hadn't thought about till now. I want to have the option not to work, this person says.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Resentment, love him, but must be nice trotting off to work. Lol, that really made me laugh.
Trotting.
I love that one. He's just trotting off, getting his little coffee, having a crank.
Yes, yep.
And then the last one I'll call out is defense family here. Location instability, no support systems or friends close by. That is so hard.
Yeah, that's so hard.
I don't even know what the answer is to that one. That's such a challenging position to be in.
It is.
Now, Loz, you little tipster, you give me something good.
Here's my tip. Okay, this is a bit of a sneaky one. My tip is take a day off while the kids are in childcare and do a day date.
Oh,
that's my tip.
I love it. Are we putting it under personal care leave? What sort of leave are we looking at here?
It depends what your company has, but my previous company had 4 days of wellbeing leave, so one every quarter that you're allowed to take, and they expired. So you couldn't accrue them. You're allowed to put one in. But that's exactly what I think a wellbeing day is.
Yeah.
If your partner can do it and also has a policy like that, take the leave for the 1 day of your wellbeing leave while your kid's in daycare and just go out for lunch. It's so nice. If you can afford it, go to Domino's. It doesn't matter where you go. Get a pizza, sit in the park. Who cares? Just enjoy your life in the sun.
I am all for it. We actually did that when Posey was really young, and your auntie and uncle, my in-laws, took Ray for the night. And we had a great lunch down here, down the coast.
Beautiful.
And it was just bliss. I mean, we did still have a baby, but she was 3 weeks old, so I wasn't really going to get her looked after.
Yeah, fine.
And it was great. But I always think it's funny the things that we're willing to take time off for versus what we're not. And those sorts of things are so important. Connection with your partner, a day to rest and rejuvenate, and to share a meal.
Exactly. But I think when you're doing it at night, you're paying for a babysitter, or you've got somebody else there on the clock, you're rushing, you're stressed, you're eating, you're getting home. If it's during the day and they're at daycare, you got 10 hours. Just sit back and enjoy
Piss
your ride.
On. You drink those drinks. You enjoy yourself.
What's yours, Lee?
So I've been reflecting on how nervous I felt in the lead up to having Posey about the fact that last time I had a really traditional maternity leave experience and I was paid for 3 months by CA. It was tools down properly. And I was nervous about how I would make it work when I knew I'd have to do a little bit of work straight away. We obviously did as much pre-planning between you and I as we could, and we've outsourced everything that we can, but it still obviously required a bit of work on my end. And anyone that's in the same position, I just want to say you can do it. You can do it. It might be hard. Things will have to be let go of. You might have to go down to the bare minimum of what you can do, but you can do it. One thing I do want to call out is we have both sets of grandparents involved. We have daycare. I was lucky enough that Hayden's work has been incredibly quiet these first 6 or 8 weeks now of my postpartum journey. So I have had a lot of support.
Family support, yeah.
But I promise you that if it's something that you're really passionate about and you're a bit stressed that I guess your work life being on the rise coincided with having a baby and you're a bit annoyed and you're wondering how you'll manage it all, when there is a will, there definitely is a way. And if it's not sitting right, that's fine too. You can start to reconsider what it is that you want. But I hate to put the hustle culture sort of idea up on a pedestal. But basically, if you do want something and love something enough in your career, you will find a way to make it work with your kids.
Yeah, I agree with that, Lou. And I think sometimes it's a double-edged sword. You let go of one thing, you focus on another. It just might mean that there is something that you have to let go of, and maybe that's your appearance. Maybe that's not having a shower for the day.
Quickly, you know how you had that toothbrush thing recently, toothpaste, you put some toothpaste on your pimples.
Yes, on my pimples.
Well,
yes.
I DIY'd my eyebrows, and I am going to have to share with the Witching Hour community how fucked they looked on day one. My God, I've got blonde hair and my eyebrows looked ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. So I'll have to share that with everyone.
They looked bold. You'd probably left the dye on just for that tiny bit too long.
Oh,
Luke.
Just a little bit too long. Two things before I finish. I was actually going to open with these and I can't believe I forgot. Firstly, I've got a hens this weekend that I've totally forgot to pump for. We don't have much milk. I'm going to trial a formula as backup if I don't get enough milk by then. But I will report back on going to a hens, my bestest friend's hens, at 8 weeks postpartum. I'll tell you how I go.
Yes.
Might be a bit tired. Will be interesting to see how late I stay out, how many drinks I have. Hayden's in full control of both kids. That will be interesting. And that's it for me today, Lozzie. I've got a bit going on this weekend. I'll report back next week.
As always, if you have enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a positive 5-star, excellente, A+ review.
If you made it this far.
Follow us on RadioNot.pod. See you next week.
Bye-bye.